Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. Today on the show, I am joined by Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports. He is a football analyst for them, doing a great job breaking down film on his War Room column. So I want to get him in today to break down what he expects to see Sunday in this matchup with the Cleveland Browns. What are going to be the keys to victory for the Steelers, both offensively and defensively? We'll talk to him about that today. We'll also continue talking about this Le'Veon Bell holdout situation. You know, such a shock to all of us yesterday when it became clear that he would not just be holding out for 1 week. This could potentially be a multi-week holdout for Le'Veon Bell. Now that the dust has kind of settled, we're a day or two into this holdout now, I want to clear up some of the misconceptions that are out there about this holdout, and also want to play for you a new report from Ian Rapoport of NFL Network, where he says Le'Veon Bell may show up far sooner than a lot of us expect. Also, before we finish today, I do want to give you my predictions for this team as a whole in 2018. You know, with the Le'Veon Bell thing going on this week, we haven't really done a season expectation podcast. We'll do that at the end of today's podcast. How will this team fare without Le'Veon Bell for potentially an extended period of time? And how does that change the Super Bowl calculus for this team, right? Is this team still a Super Bowl caliber team? And really, is it a Super Bowl caliber team even with Le'Veon Bell? Has this team done enough defensively to address the problems they had a year ago and put them in the upper echelon of NFL teams and in the AFC? We'll talk about that today as well. Welcome to the show. I am your host, Tony Serino. You can find more of this podcast by going to iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, wherever you find podcasts. Search Locked On Steelers, hit that subscribe button, and you will get your daily dose. Also, be sure to check out the new Facebook page and the Facebook group. Those are both live and ready to go. Search Locked On Steelers on Facebook. You can find them there. Love to see some of you have already joined in there and gotten that discussion going. If you can't tell already, I love talking Steelers. And so, you know, don't be shy, right? Reach out via Facebook or on Twitter, at Steeler Country on Twitter. Join the discussion. One of the benefits of doing this podcast is being able to interact with you fans. And so I'm hopeful that as we get this season rolling now between Twitter, Facebook, some of these live streams we're going to be doing, this can really become a two-way conversation rather than just kind of me, you know, spewing here on this podcast weekly. So again, be sure to follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country, or like and follow me on Facebook, Locked On Steelers, and we can continue this discussion there. But let's start today with some news and notes, and we'll start with the practice reports for both the Browns and Steelers. Cleveland's practice report looks pretty similar to what it did a day ago. Linebacker James Burgess did not practice because of a concussion, and defensive back E.J. Gaines also did not practice with a knee injury. Burgess, of course, did not practice on Wednesday. Gaines is new to this list, so he may be limited or not available at all when we get to game time on Sunday. Tight end Seth DeValve, wide receiver Josh Gordon, and tackle Desmond Harrison all limited in practice. Probably all three guys will play. I especially expect to see Josh Gordon out there on Sunday. I think he's going to figure heavily into the Browns game plan on Sunday. Desmond Harrison, this is one of the guys that is in the running for the starting left tackle job in Cleveland. Again, they don't have a left tackle yet. Hugh Jackson said that he's going to wait till Friday to announce who that left tackle will be. I guess that's how things go in Cleveland. A lot of teams have a quarterback controversy where they wait till late in the week to announce who's going to be the starter. In Cleveland, they have a left tackle battle where they wait till Friday to announce who their starting left tackle is going to be. It could be Desmond Harrison. It could be Joe Bitonio. I think that's going to be a big storyline going into this game, though, is whoever it is going up against Bud Dupree on that blind side. And then full participants in practice, linebacker Jannard Avery, defensive tackle Trevon Coley, defensive back Demaryius Randall, and linebacker Christian Kirksey. Coley and Avery were both limited yesterday. They were now full participants today, and I think they will be available on Sunday. Coley a starter, Avery more of a sub-package guy, but as Jeff said on Wednesday's podcast, he expects to see a lot of Avery on Sunday. Pittsburgh's practice report, on the other hand, kind of moving in the wrong direction. Not in any big, meaningful way, but, you know, again, yesterday it was only Vance McDonald on the practice report. He had practiced in a limited capacity on Wednesday. On Thursday, he did not practice at all. Looks like there was some sort of re-aggravation, or the Steelers trying to be more cautious with that foot injury on Thursday. Look, this means he's not going to play on Sunday for sure, but he was very unlikely to play on Sunday given how long he's missed so far. Again, this is a guy who hasn't practiced fully since July. So, you know, he has been out for a while now. It's tough to see him going in the wrong direction here. Again, there was hope that he could go from, you know, he could be limited this week and then move to full participation next week and maybe be available for that home opener against Kansas City. You know, look, this is the same old story for Vance McDonald now, right? I mean, you know, again, this is a player who has spent so much time during the offseason talking about how much of a difference maker he could be. But the asterisk was always if he stays healthy. And here we are. You know, he sat out minicamp. He injured 4 days into training camp. We haven't seen him since. It's, you know, it is not just the story of Vance McDonald's career on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It is unfortunately the story of Vance McDonald's career as a whole. He just cannot stay healthy. And so, you know, this team really cannot rely on him to be healthy throughout the season. I do hope he can be back and ready to go for Kansas City. But, you know, as we talk about teams game planning or trying to figure out, you know, who they're going to have available, you have to figure the Steelers at this point have to move on with Jesse James to figure he's going to be their key contributor at the tight end position. And then the biggest news on Thursday was the fact that Terrell Edmunds is now the starter at strong safety on this defense. That was first reported by Dave Lolley today. That's big news, right? I mean, look, you go back to April when they drafted this guy 28th overall. It was a roundly criticized pick as a reach, a player that could have gotten in the second, maybe even third round, not a first round caliber player, not a player that was going to be able to see the field early in his career. Yes, maybe his athletic gifts could develop into something, but early on, you know, he wasn't going to be a key contributor on this team. I was one of those people saying those things. If you go back and listen to the podcast right after they picked him, I was very critical of the Steelers, of passing on a couple other players I liked, but also taking a player that kind of falls into the trap that the Steelers like to do, which is taking these freak athletic players who are very raw at their positions. As I said after that criticism, I want to be wrong, and I have never been happier to be wrong about a Steelers player. Now, look, he still has to go out and prove it in regular season games, but clearly he has shown enough to this coaching staff to beat out a veteran like Morgan Burnett. Certainly Morgan Burnett's injury problems throughout the preseason, throughout training camp, helped that. And remember, Edmunds was able to get on the field as a starter early on in camp because Morgan Burnett was down after the first couple practices. He did a great job. You know, as we talked about during camp, right? Those first couple days, first couple weeks of Terrell Edmunds were very, very good, very explosive. He certainly leveled off after that, but he, you know, his athleticism, it shines out there, and I'm looking forward to seeing him on Sunday. It says a lot about his development early on in his career that the Steelers feel confident enough to start him over Morgan Burnett on this defense. Now, we're still going to see a lot of Morgan Burnett on Sunday, right? You know, just because Edmunds starts doesn't mean he's going to be in that position the entire game, and so he may not be there in every play for base or every play for nickel. They can certainly swap those two guys out, and we're going to see a lot of three safety looks. You know, we've seen the dollar, dime, quarters. We've seen all of these different looks from the defense throughout the preseason and throughout training camp. I expect to see those looks again on Sunday. So, you know, again, this is not a situation where, you know, Morgan Burnett has now been benched and he's going to be lucky to see the field or anything like that. I still expect to see a healthy dose of Morgan Burnett as well. One thing I will say about this that is kind of worrying, again, I like the youth. I like the athleticism. I like the things that this defense is bringing to the table in the long run in 2018. But I will say, if we're talking just about Sunday's game, one thing that does worry me, we now are starting Sean Davis in his first ever game at free safety as in regular season game alongside a rookie strong safety, right? I mean, that is going to be our starting lineup in this game, is two guys who are playing their first ever games in the regular season at their respective positions. That's a little bit worrying, especially for a secondary that had so many communication issues over the last couple years, and especially at the end of last season. Also, Morgan Burnett, while he didn't show it as much in preseason, especially when he had to play free safety, he's a very good tackler. It's one of the reasons why he was brought into this football team, was to be a sure tackler. We saw some of that when he was much better when he was closer to the line of scrimmage in that way. You know, taking him off the field, putting Edmunds on the field, we've seen Edmunds kind of struggle with tackling at times as well. So look, that is going to be a worry for me early on this season. I do think that combination with Sean Davis and his athleticism at free safety is something they lacked a year ago with Mike Mitchell. I think with with Terrell Edmunds and his athleticism at strong safety. I think, you know, his skill set certainly translates to that position very, very well. And so I think over time, that duo can develop into a very good safety combo on this team and the kind of safety combo this team hasn't had in a long time. But it's going to take some time for those two to develop. So we're talking about Sunday's game. I think that has to worry you just a little bit. And then before we get to Christopher Carter, I do want to talk about some of this misconceptions that are happening about this Le'Veon Bell situation. You know, the first one is this idea that has come up now, and you're hearing this over and over again. If you turn on First Take or if you turn on any of these morning shows that are talking about this Le'Veon Bell situation, the majority of the topic there comes down to one thing, right? Everyone says the same thing. Well, the Steelers should just pay Le'Veon if they want him to show up. They should just pay him if they want him to show up. Okay, let's get that point out of the way right off the top. They cannot pay him a penny more than the $14.54 million Le'Veon Bell is due as a part of his franchise tag. That is all the Steelers can pay him. If they wanted to give him a long-term deal, if they've all of a sudden come to their senses and said, oh, you know what, you're right. We should give him the Todd Gurley deal that he wanted, right? Let's go back and let's rework this deal. They could not because the deadline to get that deal done was July 15th. When that deadline passed, both Le'Veon Bell and the Steelers knew he would be playing this season for the $14.5 million franchise tag. So that has not changed. Nothing has changed there as far as his salary for 2018, and nothing can change going forward. They cannot pay him. He either plays under the $14.5 million or he does not. He finds himself every week by not showing up the $850,000 he's due every week. But this idea that the Steelers should pay him, again, it doesn't have any basis in reality. They cannot pay him anymore, even if they wanted to. The second thing that keeps getting said is this idea that the Steelers broke some sort of code. That they've, you know, again, that the Steelers, by going out there and trashing Le'Veon Bell yesterday through the media, when it came to the offensive line and the comments they made, right, that they broke some sort of code here. And they're talking, you know, why would they begrudge him his money? And you never talk about a player who's in a contract dispute and that kind of thing. And I want to clear that up as well, because we talked about this yesterday. What the offensive line, the reaction that the Steelers had to Le'Veon's no-show had absolutely nothing to do with money or his contract. It had everything to do with the constant and repeated deception that he and his agent engaged in between July and Wednesday when he made everyone believe that he would be there for week one. That is what upset so many fans, so many people in the organization, and so many players on this football team. It had nothing to do with the fact that he wants to get big money. He wants to reset the running back market. I think every player on the team understands where he is from that perspective. But the idea that he continues to go out there and say that he wants to have a great season in 2018, he wants to have his best statistical season in 2018, and yet his agent continues to go throughout the media and say that he is worried about the number of touches that he's going to get in 2018, and he is worried about the wear and tear he's going to get in 2018, and so he's going to have to protect himself, but won't actually go out and say he's going to hold out or for how many games he's going to hold out. We have to read between the lines there. That is what is upsetting to so many fans and especially to the player. So again, you know, this idea that they should pay Le'Veon, it has no basis. And the idea that the Steelers were trashing Le'Veon because of his contract dispute, again, has no basis. They are doing that because, you know, at best he was being deceptive, and at worst, he outright lied to the Steelers about when he would be there. Now, I also do want to play a report from Ian Rapoport, who went on NFL Network today. You know, it has been widely assumed now when you listen to Adisa Bakari, when you read between the lines, as he asked us to do, right, that Le'Veon Bell's not showing up for a while. But according to Ian Rapoport, Le'Veon Bell could show up as early as Saturday. Here's Ian.
Well, to be clear, Rich, Le'Veon Bell and his agent, Adisa Bakari, have not informed the Steelers of any plans as far as when he's going to report. And Bell himself has not told any of his teammates, which certainly would explain why everyone in this situation appears miffed. But from the best I can tell from the people involved in this, their guess is that Bell will show up on Saturday. That is what it is looking like. He would be in the building. He would receive his $800,000 plus game check, not play week one, and then get ready for week two. Plus, that would actually jibe with what he tweeted right in the middle of July, right after franchise tag day, after he did not accept the 5-year, $70 million offer, that he would be there week one. Now, there's a couple other things we need to know as well. The Steelers are not going to trade him. There's been no request. There's been no permission to talk to anyone. That is not going to happen at this point. They're not going to rescind the franchise tag for Bell. He is going to play for the Steelers. It is just a matter of when, and everyone is in the dark.
All right.
So how about that? He could show up as early as Saturday. Now, we had heard Saturday as a date being thrown around on Wednesday afternoon after it became apparent that Le'Veon Bell wasn't going to show up on Wednesday. People started to think, okay, Saturday would be the next logical day he would show up because that's a day where he could show up, still be on the roster in time to get his game check for Sunday's game, but not be included on the roster for week one. So he wouldn't actually have to play in the football game, right? I mean, that was the next logical date that was thrown out. But that went out the window when you heard Adisa Bakari talk, right? When Adisa Bakari started saying things like, you know, his main concern in 2018 is you know, his health and getting into 2019 healthy and all of that. Or I guess he didn't actually say that, right? Because we're supposed to read between the lines of everything he says. He can't actually just come out and say, hey, Le'Veon wants to be healthy going into 2019. So he's worried about the wear and tear in his body, right? He can't just come out and say that. We have to read between the lines. But anyway, if we're reading between the lines, Le'Veon Bell sounds like a football player that is not interested in playing the sport of football in 2018. What he is interested in is getting into 2019 healthy, right? If you read between the lines. So why would he show up on Saturday? This makes no sense to me. Again, if we listen to Adisa Bakari, if we read between the lines, he wants to be healthy. Now, Le'Veon Bell in 2017, when he came into this football game, got 13 touches in this game, right? Now, Le'Veon Bell got over 400 touches in the entirety of 2018 or 2017. So if you subtract the 13 touches he got against Cleveland, which is what he's avoiding by not showing up in this football game. I mean, what? Why would you show up on Saturday? This is nothing, right? This is a nothing thing. Yeah, you can collect your game check, but the Steelers could also withhold that game check. I mean, look, the Steelers could also choose to put him on the exempt list and say, no, you don't get your game check for 2018 or for week one or week two. They could do it for 2 weeks. Now, you know, the Steelers usually take the high road in these kind of things, so I think they're very unlikely to do that, but they could. They very easily could. And so, you know, that's probably got to be part of his calculation as well, right? I don't expect him to show up. I know that Ian Rapoport probably has good sources around Le'Veon Bell, but we've heard this story before, right? We heard from Jerry Dulac that Le'Veon Bell was telling people it was going to be Monday. It wasn't Monday. Pouncey was very sure after talking to Le'Veon Bell, as you heard yesterday, that he would show up on Wednesday. He didn't show up on Wednesday. And so the idea that now all of a sudden, oh, you know, he's actually just going to show up on Saturday. I don't buy this. I'm not holding my breath. I think Le'Veon Bell doesn't show up at least till week 10. I think that is the earliest we see Le'Veon Bell this season, given what his agent has said publicly. All right, now let's bring in Christopher Carter of DK Pittsburgh Sports. He is a football analyst for them, doing film breakdowns on his War Room column. Chris, welcome back to Locked On Steelers.
Glad to be back, Tony. How you been, man?
Very good, very good. Let's start with this Le'Veon Bell situation. He did not show up on Wednesday. Crazy. I know a lot of us did not expect this. How surprised are you that Le'Veon Bell will probably be holding out at least one regular season game, and it sounds like it could potentially be up to half the season?
I got to tell you, Tony, I'm really surprised. I honestly thought this guy was going to not pass up the opportunity to make money. I wasn't necessarily thinking about him thinking that this is imperative that he gets in for the sake of the season, but I thought at least with the concern that he's been making about his dollars, you know, $800,000+ for a single game, you know, he's certainly putting that at risk. And officially, he can sign up anytime before Saturday at 4 p.m. and show up and sign his franchise tag, and then he'll be saved. So there's still a chance that he comes in for that, but pretty certain, you know, it's a certainty now that he will not be playing you know, on Sunday against the Browns. Right now, I think that's the biggest concern, is that right now everyone knows that James Conner is going to be getting the bulk of the carries, and this is a Cleveland team that has been rejuvenated with a lot of talent from across the NFL, as well as some players that this Steelers team didn't play last year. And for those who remember, it was a really tight game last year,
and that was
with Le'Veon Bell in the field. So a lot of question marks heading into this game, and there's a lot of talk about if this is going to be a quote-unquote distraction, as everyone loves to talk about with the Steelers.
Yeah, let's start with that week one matchup. Like you said, the Steelers play the Browns on Sunday. How much do you think Le'Veon Bell not being there is going to affect what the Steelers wanted to do going into this football game and the game plan overall?
I think honestly, the biggest impact it's going to have is that he's not there in pass protection, because when you look at, and this is what we're focusing on in Carter's classroom for this week at DKPittsburghSports.com, But we're when you look at the history of him face of Ben Roethlisberger facing Greg Williams, the Browns defensive coordinator, it is a history of lots of pressure and heat and all sorts of different attacks that force Ben Roethlisberger to have to be good. He has faced a Greg Williams defense five times. Now, he's won four of those matchups, but each time he's at least gotten sacked once. In all but one of those games, and that was the last game, he was sacked at least three times. One of those games being the Rams game in which he took that a tough knee shot from Mark Barron and was out for several games afterwards back in 2015. So I think the biggest factor is that James Conner is going to have to be very prudent in pass protection, not just in strength, but in gap assignment and knowing where to be and when to be there and how to stop the extra blitzer, because Greg Williams is going to be sending the extra blitzers, and that's where it could probably be a huge impact in favor of the Browns.
Yeah, and then as last year, you know, Ben Roethlisberger, because Le'Veon Bell kind of wasn't ready to go, the Steelers weren't ready to give him a bunch of carries at the beginning of last season. I think he only got, 10 carries in that game in the opener last season. Do you think the Steelers offensively are going to feel more willing to give James Conner a bulk load of, let's say, 15, 20, 25 carries in this football game?
I can say you can look forward to about 15. I think that they're going to try and open up the offense a little bit more. I think there's going to be a lot more vertical throwing in this game, especially with how the team played in general in the preseason. Now, I know, again, it's preseason, doesn't matter, but the way that Randy Feuchner was calling the plays for his young quarterbacks, it gave me the impression that, hey, they're ready to open the offense up a little bit more, take these sort of more shot plays, let them stretch the field more and get more natural reads as far as where's the defense going. Instead of taking these quick hits, we're just going to hit the flats and, you know, look for screens. So take the necessary reading part of the game away from the quarterback and put the ball in the hands of a playmaker out there. I think there's going to be a lot more of trying to find those open spots, and that could work to Ben Roethlisberger's advantage, but he has to get the time back there. And again, I think that's going to be the major issue, because Greg Williams, in all of his career, he loves to bring the heat. And I think that's going to be a huge factor as far as how this game is played.
Yeah, with Todd Haley, that offense would use no huddle every once in a while, and they were very successful doing it. I think, you know, this offense has certainly talked about wanting to get out to fast starts this season. Do you think with Randy Feuchner now as the offensive coordinator and him and Ben having such a good rapport, we're going to see more no huddle this season and specifically in this game?
Well, yeah, that's something that Ben Roethlisberger has talked about, was that he's always wanted to implement the no huddle a lot more, and that Randy Feuchner's kind of been on board with that. So I can say that confidently that you can expect there's going to be a concentration of more no huddle availability, at least to Ben Roethlisberger, when he sees the matchups that he likes. Now he might not do it as much if he says, like, okay, well, we can't win that one. But when he gets into a groove, you know, just let him do what he does. And I think that's what Randy Feuchner is going to be comfortable doing, because I think that Feuchner, people forget, he's not just a quarterback coach. He's been a quarterback coach and a receivers coach on this team for more than a decade. And I think he's been here longer than Mike Tomlin has. So when you look at how comfortable he is in this system, it's a real opportunity for the Steelers to have a guy who knows how they've liked to work with Ben Roethlisberger in all stages of his career and can play to the strengths of the players that he sees on this team.
If you're Randy Feuchner and going into this football game, are you? It sounds like you want this offense to go in and kind of attack that Brown secondary with the arsenal you have at wide receivers. Is that a good characterization of kind of how you think the Steelers should attack?
Absolutely. But not just attack them in sense, just like go out and get them, guys. But you got to attack them with strategy. Now, one thing I noticed with Greg Williams' defenses, Tony, is if you look at how they play, they love to be aggressive, and aggressive both in the pass rush, but also aggressive in coverage. There's a lot of times that you look at the tape and you'll see their cornerbacks with the Browns, when he was with the Rams, when he was with the Saints, They love to press the guys. They love to press receivers, bang them on the line of scrimmage, try to jam up their routes as much as they can to give the pass rush more time to work, and then play with those really deep safeties that say, okay, if one of our guys up front loses control of a receiver, we'll be the will be the safety, and that's where the name came for the position. But Greg Williams loves to be aggressive with his cornerbacks, but the best way to offset that is to stack your receivers. You know, put Juju and Antonio Brown right next to each other, or put them in a bunch formation. Let them sort of bunch up and make it more difficult for them to get straight up lined up with that inside leverage, you know, your inside foot just inside of their inside foot, and, making it more difficult for their cornerbacks and safeties to press the Steelers receivers. That'll give players like Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster and James Washington better chances to break loose in the open field. It'll also probably start forcing the Browns to go into more zone defenses, which will make them a little less comfortable and give Ben Roethlisberger a little bit more quicker reads as far as what soft spots he can pick at.
So overall, Steelers offense against Browns defense. Now, there's been a lot of talk about this young defense, guys like Myles Garrett, that this is an up-and-coming team and an up-and-coming defense. Do you expect that this offense is going to have as much trouble moving the football and scoring as they did a year ago?
I think they're going to fare a little bit better, and because I think Ben Roethlisberger is going to come into this game a lot more confident and a lot more aware. You looked at the way that he was processing the Browns last year, and really processing most teams they faced last year. He would get to his first read, think if it was his right, he would stick to it, and he would fire, or he would hold on to it and wait for that first read to open up, especially when that first read was Antonio Brown. I think that you saw him flip that script in the second half of the season last year, and if he can carry that over this year, that's going to make a huge difference in how the offense operates. I mean, there were several times where last year he would drop back, he would commit to Antonio Brown, and he'd be in coverage. Sometimes he'd come up with it, sometimes he wouldn't, but there'd be Juju Smith-Schuster running in the flat or Martavis Bryant open on the sideline, and he just wouldn't see them because he wasn't rolling through his progression. And that's what the Steelers need him to do, is to be able to go through progressions, take what the defense is giving you, and when they're being that aggressive, find ways to counterpunch that aggression by, again, getting the bunch ups, making sure you're switching plays and countering where they're coming, bringing the pressure. Make sure you have extra protection there, or sliding the protection to that side of the offense. There's going to be ways to offset them. It's going to be that chess match and see, has Ben Roethlisberger improved in how he has a command of the offense? Because this time last year, he did not have a strong command, and that led to the struggles. But I think if he plays the way he did in the second half of last season, in this opening game, the offense will fare much better.
Now, switching over to the other side of the ball, the Browns' new offense, you've got. I mean, this is a pretty much rebuilt top to bottom. Yeah. Tyrod Taylor at quarterback, Carlos Hyde at running back, and they've also got Nick Chubb there as well. You got Jarvis Landry at wide receiver. I guess you can consider Josh Gordon to be a new receiver for them, being that he's been suspended for so long. You got Todd Haley over there leading the charge with the Browns. Yeah, just give me your thoughts on this Browns offense. I don't even know what to think about this Browns offense because, again, it is so new. It is so different from what we saw a year ago.
And one of the biggest new parts of it is they still don't really have a left tackle.
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
Without Joe Thomas, who's been the pillar, the automatic Pro Bowler for them for a decade now, they still have been trying to fill that void, and they just haven't. They got Chris Hubbard over there. They got J.C. Treader. Joel Bitonio, but it's, they're still trying to figure out who's going to be on this offensive line. I think that's where the Steelers have to take advantage of, is that this offensive line is still not set. They still don't have the superstar players that could be part of this group. Start firing up those Keith Butler blitzes. Get Mike Hilton, Cam Sutton, Terrell Edmonds, whatever in the box players that can be flipped from being coverage guys to blitzers. Put them in the box, let them confuse Tyrod Taylor, force him to have to make quicker decisions, and also force this offensive line to have to communicate. When you have to force a player to think more as they're taking their steps and they're dropping back in pass protection, that's when you have the advantage. You can pressure this offensive line that is still figuring out their chemistry with one another, let alone the entire offense. I think that's how you get to them, and that way you prevent Tyrod Taylor from being able to drop back and feel comfortable and start making good decisions with the football, because that's what he likes to do. Is he likes to be able to drop back, figure out the soft spot, pick at that, and keep the sticks moving. He's a chain moving quarterback, but he's not a huge play quarterback. But as far as Jarvis Landry and Josh Gordon, that's going to be an immediate test for this secondary. You know, the one that everyone's saying is still a soft point of this defense. I think that it's going to be a huge test. I do think that if the Steelers can do one thing, if they shut down Carlos Hyde on first and second downs, and they're able to force the Browns to third and eights, third and nines, and even third and sevens, I think that's going to put pressure on the Browns to have to pass the ball, drop back a little bit more, and that'll allow the Steelers' pass rushing and the different things that Keith Butler wants to do to take hold.
Now, you mentioned the issues that the Browns have at left tackle. One of the biggest changes the Steelers are making on defense is switching Bud Dupree to the kind of blind side an effort to get him more sacks. Do you think this is, it's the opening week, right? And, of course, every year we go into the year with all this hype around Bud Dupree, and this is the year he breaks out. It seems like a favorable matchup for him. Do you think he can have a real impact this week as a pass rusher?
Absolutely, especially when you consider how they're probably going to be lining him up a little bit wider and closer, but they're also going to be lining him up probably with other pass rushers that aren't even necessarily pass rushers. You're going to probably see Mike Hilton come over him a few times. You're probably going to see Terrell Edmonds, drop down, or even Sean Davis come down and say, we're going to be standing next to Bud Dupree, and it's going to force people to have to think. Also, you got to consider that he's going to be working with Cam Hayward. Bud Dupree is best when he works in space, when he gets to use his explosive first step, because he still has some of the best combine numbers of his generation of linebackers, but he just hasn't been able to put it together mechanically to be a great pass rusher. Now what he has to do is, when he gets those opportunities in space, when Cam Hayward draws a double team or forces his man so far away that a tackle is on an island, that's when he needs that speed and explosiveness to kick in and get to the quarterback. It's a chance for him to have a really big day, especially when considering I think the Steelers are going to be playing off of his speed and having to force Tyrod Taylor to decide, okay, is he coming or is the corner coming or are they both coming? And that's where those complications are going to happen. So, yeah, I think his explosiveness is going to put a lot of problems if the Browns aren't able to communicate on that offensive line.
Now, sticking with the outside linebacker position, one of the biggest question marks coming out of when the Steelers announced their 53 was, and it raised a lot of eyebrows, the Steelers only have three outside linebackers on the roster right now. It's Bud Dupree, T.J. Watt, Anthony Chiklo. What can we read into this? Do you think the Steelers are going to make a roster adjustment as we get closer to game day, maybe bring someone like Keon Adams up onto the 53, or is it more likely we're going to see guys like maybe Vince Williams or Matthew Thomas as edge rushers like we saw at times during the preseason?
Well, I think you can definitely count on the inside guys playing out and the outside guys playing in. You saw a little bit of that last year with guys lining up all over the place. You saw more of that in the preseason. You saw Matthew Thomas when he had the strip sack fumble recovery that he almost scored a touchdown on. I think you're going to see a lot of that moving around, and that's all part of, I think, Keith Butler's plan to confuse opposing quarterbacks, to force them, hey, you're going to have to be smart and identify this isn't the same look every time, or this isn't a base idea that you can just sit down and be like, all right, it's coming from there, it's coming from here, it's coming from there. You know, it's going to be okay. They're doing this. We're not sure. We just have to play to our base, and we have to stick to what we know, and that makes them have to think and read and react. And when you get them thinking, that's when those mistakes can happen and where you can create those sort of confusion points. I think that's going to be a major part of it. I'd expect to see Vince Williams getting a lot of time pass rushing, both up the middle through B gap and as well as on the edge, on occasion on those third down situations, because they love it. If they can get Vince Williams on a running back, especially a Duke Johnson or a Carlos Hyde, those are going to be the big times that he's going to be able to take advantage of the offense.
Throughout the preseason, throughout training camp, there's been so many injuries up and down within the secondary, within the defense as a whole. This defense really hasn't played together that much as a unit, right? And so one of the biggest problems throughout the offseason that the defense talked about was communication and wanting to get better at communicating. We saw so many big plays given up by this defense a year ago. Does that worry you at all going into this game, the fact that these guys haven't had a chance to play together maybe enough, and with guys like Josh Gordon on the other side and their tight end David Njoku, who maybe not a big play tight end yet, but certainly seems like he could be that type of player in 2018. Does that worry you at all, the lack of communication so far?
Well, it doesn't worry me, because win or lose, I'm still going to have a job and people are going to come read what happens with them. But should it worry the Steelers? I do think there is some light concern, but The Steelers, you know, you know Mike Tomlin. You've heard him talk about it. They do not live in their fears. They're coming into this in the sense that they've been practicing enough. They've been waiting to hit more people to show everyone what they have. And I got to be honest, I think they might be a little bit tired of this whole the defense is so bad narrative that people have been talking about. People don't realize that the defense ranked in the top 10 and in the top 5 in many major statistical categories last year. And yet they're still talked about like they're one of the worst defenses in the NFL. And they also have a strong concentration of young players in T.J. Watt and Bud Dupree and Stephon Tuitt and Artie Burns and Sean Davis and now Terrell Edmonds. You know, all these guys are 25 and under, not to mention Javon Hargrave. You know, they got all these young guys that are continuing to progress and show that they were worth the draft picks that were invested into them. I think that this team's a little bit more hungry than people give them credit for. And this defense can, with the aggression I think Keith Butler's going to have and how many different looks he has, that's going to override any worry that they have. Now, if you're a Steelers fan, yeah, of course, you're concerned because this is, you know, you still don't have traditional 2, 3, 4 pass rushers that are getting you double-digit sacks this season. And that's been the theme of every great Steelers defense since the Chuck Knoll era. So, you know, you look at that, and, yeah, you have every right to be nervous if you're a fan. But I think if you're looking at it from the Steelers perspective, you're excited to finally get your guys out there, see what it's worth. And I got to tell you, Tony, I'm a little surprised that Brian Allen is currently on the practice squad. Because if I was another team, I might have been looking at that guy as a depth player. Same for Keon Adams. I think that those guys floating on the practice squad the way they are, that's a huge benefit to the Steelers. And I do think that, like you said, I think that Keon Adams or someone will be brought up eventually.
Yeah, no, the Brian Allen cut was an interesting one. I mean, look, yeah, he didn't have a great preseason, didn't have a great training camp, but he's such an interesting prospect just from a size and speed perspective. I agree with you. It's amazing that he was able to go to the practice squad, especially given last year, right? They held him on the roster for the entire year because of that fear that they didn't want him to go to another team. We've talked a lot during the offseason, of course, you know, this dollar look, right? The dime defense, how many safeties are they going to use at any given time? Now you add to that this new seminal defense with Matthew Thomas coming on the field and moving Vince Williams to edge rusher. How much of that is going to play into this game? Are we going to be, come Monday, how much are we still going to be talking about the dollar and the dime and the seminal defense?
I think a lot of it depends on how the Browns are going to come out. If the Browns come out and they try to overload the field with their receivers, you know, they got Antonio Callaway to go on with Gordon and Landry. Do they bring out Rashard Higgins? Do they try to use double tight end sets with David Njoku and Darren Fells? You know, they got athletic players all around the ball. And I think that if they try to use those different kind of sets, which Todd Haley, we know he loves to spread his offenses out, I would expect them to see that quite a bit in this game, especially considering, you know, Todd Haley, he's going to want to get the ball quickly in the hands of Josh Gordon and Jarvis Landry. I think he's going to find creative ways to use Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson, especially on those passing downs. So definitely look for those packages to come out and be used. And if the Browns are able to run the ball, if they're able to average 3.5 to 4 yards a carry throughout the majority of this game, that's going to change the tone of how this game is played and force the Steelers' hand to say, all right, do we put more big bodies back out there and go with our 3-4 looks and John Bostic and Vince Williams along with Watt and Dupree, or are we looking for something else with our safeties out there? It's really going to be a test of that. But I think that the Steelers, they like what they saw in run defense all preseason, especially with Terrell Edmonds out there, and they're going to be confident with that group, at least in this matchup, until the Browns find a way to break it.
And then just give me your overall thoughts on this matchup, right? The Browns come in with all this excitement. They've got this new roster overhaul, the new offensive coordinator, right? There's all this excitement in Cleveland. For Pittsburgh, on the other hand, you know, they're still trying to get the taste of that Jacksonville loss out of their mouth, starting a new season. And now they've got this Le'Veon Bell thing hanging over them, right? They have to go to Cleveland, a division rival. Is there a chance that Cleveland can actually pull off this upset?
Oh, there's absolutely a chance. I mean, they're a professional football team. I believe that any given Sunday is a real thing, and especially when you consider that the Browns have the benefit of nobody knows what this team is about to look like, because usually when you come out, you're like, okay, I know what this guy can do, I know what that guy can do, but I mean most of this offense, I mean, you look at from Jarvis Landry to Carlos Hyde to Tyrod Taylor to even Josh Gordon, who hasn't been there in forever, to Antonio Callaway, to Chris Hubbard. This offense is pretty much new. The Steelers really didn't even get a look at Myles Garrett because he wasn't there at the beginning of last season. I think that right now you're looking at a lot of new things they can surprise people with and catch people off guard. You know, people are talking about right now in Pittsburgh, Tony, they're talking a lot about, you know, is this going to be a distraction? You know, because they're talking about is all the Steelers that are talking about is Le'Veon Bell. But I can tell you that Dan Kovacevic, the owner of our website and the guy that leads the way for us, he was in the locker room. He's been in the locker room this week, and he's been talking to these players. And when he asked them about Bell, those quotes that people are getting are usually at the very beginning of those interviews. And as soon as someone else tries to delve more into it, they start talking about Cleveland. They start flipping around and saying, we're looking at this for the Browns. We're looking at Myles Garrett. We're looking at our matchups. Looking at how to beat these guys. They aren't the distracted team that everyone's talking about. But because this is the Browns and they've won one game in the past two seasons, I can absolutely expect that if people on the outside of this locker room are underestimating the Browns, and if the Browns come out and they have a good showing and make it a tough game for the Steelers, the narrative this time next week is going to be win or lose. If it's a tough game for the Steelers, is that Mike Tomlin didn't have them prepared. They were distracted. They overlooked them. That's going to be a narrative whether or not it's true. And I think that's going to be the story if the Steelers can't do it. But I do think the Steelers are in position to control this game. As long as they're able to, again, counter Greg Williams' defenses, make sure, put them on their heels with their pass rush and their aggressive coverage tactics and make them have to double think what they're doing. And on the defensive side of the ball, do not let them get into a rhythm that, I think they have the means to make this a good game for them and control the narrative. But it's going to depend on how cognizant are the Browns and how fluent can they be on their side of the ball.
And then before I let you go, I know it seems like ages ago with this Le'Veon thing happening, but the controversy in Pittsburgh 3 or 4 days ago was their decision to keep Josh Dobbs as the backup quarterback over Landry Jones. I wanted to get your take on it. How surprised were you that the Steelers let go of a veteran like Landry Jones to keep Josh Dobbs?
I got to tell you, man, I was super surprised, but not for the reason that everyone else I've been hearing from everyone else. Everyone's saying, oh, this is so dangerous because if Landry Jones is gone, that means as soon as Ben goes down, the season's over. I think this one, people are saying that there's one major argument against this. I'm for it. I think that this was a smart move on the part of the Steelers because I have been following Josh Dobbs since he was in college. This guy is going to be something in the NFL if he's given the chance in a good team with weapons around him. I think that he creates as much plays, if not more, than Landry Jones does. The only thing Landry Jones had on the side, in my opinion, was his experience and knowledge of the offense and knowledge of, what they like to call. But I think as far as, processing what defenses are doing and using his feet to keep plays alive, and I also think that Josh Dobbs has a better cannon, has more arm strength on the ball than Landry Jones. What it's going to come down to is if they get to those two or three games this year where Roethlisberger's hurt and he can't play, people are going to say, this is why they should have kept Landry Jones. I honestly, when you look back in those games, how many of those games, Tony, can you say that Landry Jones really went out there and won the game for them? I think he's 3-2 as a starter, and two of those wins are against the Browns and needed spectacular plays from other people on the team, including Darius Heyward-Bey chasing down an interception that was about to be a return for a touchdown, forcing a fumble at the goal line and getting the Steelers the ball back, creating effectively, I think it was a 14-point swing in the game. And then last year with Juju Smith-Schuster having a kick return for a touchdown, keeping the Steelers, giving the Steelers new life in that game. I don't think that Landry Jones is the saving backup that some people have made him out to be in this conversation. I think that he is a decent backup. He's a good guy. He knows the system. But Josh Dobbs, I think, is a bigger threat for the team and has a much higher upside. I'd like to ask you this, Tony. You've been watching these guys. Josh Dobbs in year two compared to Landry Jones in year three, year four.
Yeah.
Who would you have taken in that situation?
It's a great point because it is night and day, right? I mean, Landry Jones year two was still like, how are you even going to keep this guy on the roster?
Right.
I mean, the progression
he was
making.
Back.
Yeah. I mean, he was making progression, but I mean, he had such a poor start right? I mean, look, and I've said this, Josh Dobbs, year one to year two has been, it was an incredible improvement year one to year two, right? I mean, last year, he was bad. There's no other way to put it. Yeah. But this year, he looked like a player who should be on a 53-man roster, no doubt about mm-hmm. that. Now, look, I was more in the Landry Jones camp than you were, for sure. I thought, I think, if we're just talking about 2018, right, we're talking about a team that needs to win as many games as they can because they're going to be competing for a division. They're going to be competing for the bye week, home field advantage, right? All of that. Every regular season game is going to matter. And in that way, you know, if we're talking about the Steelers needing to win a game, let's say in New Orleans without Ben Roethlisberger, do I trust Josh Dobbs going into New Orleans and winning that game, or do I trust Landry Jones? I probably trust neither, right? But I'd probably more trust Landry Jones at this point. But look, the point is right to say that Josh Dobbs is going to be a better quarterback in his career than Landry Jones was going to be, right? And so in that way, I understand where the Steelers are coming at this, especially not just for this season, but you know, for the years to come at quarterback as we start to prepare for life without Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, man. I think the biggest thing is also you got to consider in two more years when Ben Roethlisberger is either retired or thinking about retirement, do you want to have two quarterbacks competing for the starting quarterback position and make it and see who's better, Josh Dobbs or Mason Rudolph, or do you want to have all your eggs in one basket and that being Mason Rudolph? I think you'd rather have that competition there and at least a chance for two guys to improve on each other in sort of an iron sharpens iron situation. So I think in the long term and in the short term, this is a better decision. And again, my thing is look back at Landry Jones's best days, you know, in the regular season. Often his biggest plays were, you know, toss up balls to Martavis Bryant, or, you know, hitting him on a slant and him going 80 yards for a touchdown. Yeah. You know, I mean, remember in that Bengals playoff game when Ben Roethlisberger went down, Landry Jones came in and they were completely inept. And that was not young Landry Jones. That was him in, I think, his third or fourth year, where in the position where he should have been ready to take that spot. I think that after seeing all of that, the Steelers aren't. It's not bad logic for them to say, you know what, let's take a shot at Dobbs because we like what we're seeing out of him more now, and we think that he can do something more to defenses.
Yep. All right, Chris, always great to have you on the show. Let people know where they can find your work on the internet.
Hey, man. Thanks again, Tony, for having me. My name's Chris Carter, NFL analyst. You can find me at Carter Critiques on Twitter, but I work for DKPittsburghSports.com. That's D as in dog, K as in kangaroo, and PittsburghSports.com, led by the great Dejan Kovacevic. We do Pittsburgh Pirates, Penguins, Steelers, West Virginia, Pitt, Penn State, Duke Kane, Robert Morrison. We don't have Point Park Sports, unfortunately, but we do a lot of great stuff here. I do the War Room and the Carter's Classroom breakdowns. We do film breakdowns every week. We have Morning Java talk shows. We got people in the locker rooms like Dale Lally, who's been on the beat since 1992, talking to the Steelers every day. Come there to get your interviews and all your great information and get you ready for Sunday and get you ready after Sunday whenever you need to go to work and talk about the game with your buddies.
Perfect, Chris. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Tony.
All right, unfortunately, we are kind of out of time here. We're running up against an hour now, so I'm going to put up my expectations tomorrow. We'll do a shorter podcast tomorrow on Saturday with my expectations for this team in the 2018 season. All right, that'll do it for me today. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com is the email address. You can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. Remember to go to the Facebook page, search Locked On Steelers, like us, join the Facebook group, join the discussion there. And I'll be back tomorrow for my expectations for the 2018 season right here on Locked On Steelers.